Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 180. My name is John. The good old days weren't always good. And tomorrow ain't as bad as it seems. With James Gunn's new Superman movie coming next year, and the first trailer dropping recently, there have been two very vocal camps on social media. The first is the pro-Zack Snyder crowd, who still advocate for the return of the Snyderverse. I absolutely loved the Snyderverse. I've made that point repeatedly over the years. They're not perfect movies, and I can find flaws in them. But Man of Steel is still my favorite Superman movie. And while I would love for the Snyderverse to continue, I have no delusions that will ever happen. The other camp is, of course, the anti-Zack Snyder crowd who abhor his DC movies. I have my theories on why people hate Zack Snyder, but I don't want to go in depth on that in this podcast. The anti-Zack Snyder side basically has two arguments in their arsenal. The first is the old school argument that the Christopher Reeve movies were superior, nay, the perfect representation of Superman. The second is the new school argument, stating that the recently released trailer and the set photos are all the proof we need that James Gunn's Superman will be better than the Snyderverse. I'm going to go through the cinematic Superman eras to see if these arguments hold up. For Reeves' Superman, I'm going to focus solely on Superman the movie and Superman 2. Superman Returns with Brandon Routh was meant to be a sequel to Superman 2 and treating the other sequels like they never happened. And while Returns had a couple of worthwhile moments, overall, I just don't think it has anything to contribute to this podcast. For Cavill's Superman, it will be primarily Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice. I won't delve too much into Zack Snyder's Justice League because the main focus of that movie is the team. Now, you should have watched all of these movies already because I will obviously be spoiling major plot points. I won't be discussing Superman 3, Superman 4, or Joss Whedon's Justice League as part of this comparison contrast between the cinematic universes, because those three movies are subpar, and they're best forgotten, unless you need something to use as a bad example. And as I talk about these movies, you're going to think that I'm contradicting myself. Stay with me. There's a big twist at the end. What motivated me to do this? I was in a group chat recently online with several side discussions going on, including some mention of the Reeve movies. After I made a comment supporting Man of Steel, one of the anti-Zaxxers wrote, quote, "Which one has Christopher Reeves as Superman as a hero, not a self-absorbed whiner who only saves like seven people, but has to save the dumbest family in Metropolis just so he can commit murder?" End quote. Huh. I chose not to engage further because, again, it was a group chat and the Superman stuff was already straying off topic. But hey, that's what I have the podcast for. I'm going to dissect this comment and use it as a means to show how flawed Reeves's Superman really was. These movies are not as heroic as you remember them. Now let me get the part about the family out of the way first. The family in Man of Steel that was nearly burned to death by Zod is called Dumb. What is it again? The dumbest family in Metropolis. Because they were trapped in the wrong place at the wrong time. But wait a minute. In Superman 2, the citizens of Metropolis stand around in the streets and hang out of buildings, gawking at two beings with godlike powers battling each other, debris flying and falling everywhere. At least in Man of Steel, they were smart enough to try to get away. Bystanders in the Reeve movies are definitely the dumbest. What kind of hero gives up his powers when he knows he could help the world? Your grandiose hero, who you view through your Reeve-colored glasses, made one of the most self-absorbed decisions in the history of cinematic superheroes when he willingly depowered himself just so he could fuck Lois Lane. Lois discovers his secret identity. They profess their love for each other. Do they try to figure out how to make things work with his alien physiology like every other Clark Kent and Lois Lane in the multiverse? Hell no. He's told in the Fortress of Solitude that loving a human means he has to live as a human. Why? He obeys unquestioningly and without any consideration of the consequences, uses the technology to supposedly give up his powers forever. Does he even try to find a way to temporarily remove his powers? Hell no. He can no longer help people around the world when a natural disaster hits. He can no longer help the citizens of Metropolis if something bad happens. He can't even defend Lois from an asshole in a diner. Clark gets his ass kicked, and then he whines about his lack of abilities that he brought on himself. Who again is the self-absorbed whiner? And then, shocker, they discover, because they've been too busy fucking in the fortress, that three Kryptonian prisoners have escaped the Phantom Zone and they're ready to easily conquer the Earth. A threat that only Superman can overcome. This is one of the all-time stupidest, self-absorbed, inexcusable choices of any superhero movie, with the only thing close that I can think of is Star-Lord in Infinity War. But at least Superman's stupidity would have only immediately affected the Earth, not the entire fucking universe. Of course, that's not the only selfish action. In the first Superman movie, Luthor, of course, has a scheme that was meant to destroy about 10% of California by creating a massive earthquake. Lois's car stalls on a dirt road during the earthquake. At that very same moment where the car stalls, a dam is starting to break and fall apart and will flood the valley below, killing the residents of a town. Superman gets there after the dam breaks, but he stops the massive wall of water. Now, while this is going on, though, Lois falls into a fissure created by an aftershock. After seeing that the town is safe, Superman realizes that Lois is in trouble, but by the time he gets to her, she's been crushed to death. After mourning over her dead body, he decides to go back in time, something Jor-El warned him not to do, and go back to the moment where Lois's car stalls, which, again, is while the dam is still starting to fall apart. Instead of saving Lois and hurrying back to the dam, he stays with her, chats with her for a little while, and then he flies off to take Lex to prison. The people downriver from that dam had to have drowned in a massive flood because Superman wasn't there. Now, I'm sure both Reeve and Cavill Superman saved more than 7 people, but only Reeve actually reversed time to save 1 person and let some of those previously saved people die. Who is self-absorbed again? What kind of hero murders defenseless adversaries? In Superman 2, even though his power loss is supposedly permanent, Superman regains his powers. He then tricks the evil Kryptonian trio into being depowered. Instead of stepping out of his protected cell and simply rounding up the 3 criminals who are now no threat to anyone at all, Superman fakes weakness and fealty. And with a sick crunching sound as his bones are pulverized, crushes Zod's hand. Now, this is the 70s. That hand will never properly heal after what Superman did to it. And it's not like he shares all his amazing alien technology with the world, much less his adopted country. But it doesn't matter anyway. Because Superman then throws Zod across the room where he slams into a wall, broken ribs and internal injuries, and then falls into a deep Arctic chasm below. It's the fucking Arctic Circle. Zod has no powers. He's wearing a thin little uniform with sheer billowy sleeves. Not only will that fall into the chasm severely injure him even further, the cold will kill him in minutes, if not seconds. Next, Superman stands idly by as Nan falls down the chasm to his death as well. And when Lois realizes what's going on, turns around and punches Ursa in the face, causing her to fall into yet another chasm to her death, Superman just smiles at her proudly for murdering the last of the powerless bad guys. 3 defenseless and easily subdued villains callously murdered by your bastions of heroism. Keep that in mind when I compare that to Cavill's Superman later. And I know what some people will say. Well, there's a deleted scene that shows that the villain survived. So what? That's a deleted scene. In the official release of the movie, Superman left the Kryptonians to die. And Luthor, for that matter. While he and Lois flew back to Metropolis, where Superman could also use his freshly returned superpowers to severely injure the bully from earlier in the movie. Our hero. Some other things about Reeves' Superman. The symbol on his chest was never intended by Siegel and Shuster to be anything other than an S. Now, people who don't have knowledge and refuse to look outside their myopia to find the knowledge believe that this is and always was the Kryptonian symbol of hope. But that all started from the very first movie because Marlon Brando insisted on having it on his Jor-El costume. And that would eventually evolve into it becoming the hope symbol. See, before that movie, Kryptonians never had family crests or anything like that. But since it got used in the movie, it eventually made its way into comic books, as things and characters from other media often do. Eventually, somebody felt that they had to come up with an explanation why the lone survivor of an alien race just happened to have an alphabetic character on his chest. So the story becomes that, by an amazing coincidence, the S within a diamond just so happens to be the Kryptonian symbol for hope. The only time I was interested enough in Superman to regularly buy his comic was John Byrne's wonderful post-crisis reboot. And he did away with a lot of that unnecessary kind of shit. In fact, after Byrne left, and DC gave in to that part of fandom missing the Silver Age silliness, most of those things gradually returned. And it stopped being interesting, and I stopped picking it up every month. I recently used the term nostalgia stoners to describe those who want all their new superhero movies to just be carbon copies and memories of the silly, campy films of their youth, the Silver Age silliness. But the Reeve movies did more than just embrace the silliness. They created some of their own. So stupid that even Family Guy mocked it. That weird-ass cellophane S that Superman throws at Nan that wraps him up only to disappear like 5 seconds later. Thankfully, creators have stayed away from that for the past 5 decades. Unbelievably stupid and pointless. Super strength, super speed, super hearing, super kiss? Superman kisses Lois Lane and she forgets she learned his secret identity? Look, basically every power Superman has came about because some writer for a comic book or radio show or Saturday matinee needed a quick out for their story. But you can file Super Amnesia Kiss right next to the cellophane S. It's just lazy, dumb writing. And for that matter in Superman 2, Kryptonians cannot shoot lasers out of their fingers, or teleport, or create false images of themselves. Come on. You got enough powers to work with already. You don't need to come up with more. Lastly, getting back to the whole changing the past issue with the first movie. Reversing the Earth's rotation would not reverse time, but it would probably cause a much worse disaster than Luthor's earthquake. I read recently someone trying to explain that it was supposed to be Superman breaking the time barrier by having him circle the Earth at super speed. But if that's the case, why does he then fly in the opposite direction to return the Earth to its normal rotation? That's a worse excuse than the CGI in The Flash. Now, let's talk about Cavill's Superman. Cavill Superman was never a whiner, but his movies had considerably more introspection. And that is because Batman vs. Superman, and to a lesser extent Man of Steel, attempt to tackle a question posed in one of the greatest Superman stories ever told. No, literally, it was chosen as one of the collected tales titled The Greatest Superman Stories Ever Told. The name of the story, which you'll hear in Dawn of Justice, is Must There Be a Superman? Which comes from Superman number 247, cover date January 1972, which just so happens to be the month I was born. The comic book story deals with Superman contemplating whether or not his actions are holding back humanity's progress. When should he intervene, and when should he let people work it out for themselves? The movies present this question as Superman grapples with his role on the Earth while catching flack from the military, the government, xenophobic citizens, and the media. Some key pieces of information about the Snyderverse continuity that you have to understand. You need to understand these things when watching Man of Steel and Dawn of Justice. These things are often missed by the nostalgia stoners, who have their preconceived notion of Superman based on the Reeve movies, or based on the Super Friends cartoon, or maybe they haven't read a Superman comic since 1985. Or maybe they just can't accept a story where Superman is anything more than a Super Boy Scout. First, the Snyderverse world is much closer to the real world. And as a quick aside, I just want to mention the irony that when I was a kid, I was mocked for liking DC by Marvel fans because Marvel characters had real-world problems. And now, I'm mocked for liking DC movies because they are too close to the real world. Jonathan and Martha Kent are just as protective about Clark as in any other continuity, and are just as serious about keeping his secret. The difference is, this time, they actually dare to articulate what no one else has the guts to say in any other iteration of the characters. Martha tells Clark flat out, "You don't owe this world a damn thing." And she's damn right. When Clark asks his father if he should have let his classmates drown, Jonathan says, "I don't know. Maybe." Why? Because Jonathan is now a heartless human being? No. It's because he is afraid for his son, who he holds first and foremost in his heart. And let's be honest, any parent worth their salt would hold their child above all others as well. He's afraid of what others will do if they find out Clark's secret. And Martha and Jonathan are justified, because a good percentage of the world treats Superman like crap, despite everything he does. Lana's mother tries to confront the Kents about Clark saving the school bus, and they're trying to convince her that Lana was seeing things. She should just be happy that her fucking kid is safe. But if Lana is talking about it, then others are talking about it. And that secret will eventually get to the wrong ears. When Clark appears to the military to be turned over to Zod, What's the first thing they do? They handcuff him. He's cooperating, and they treat him like a criminal. The government sees him as a threat. Dawn of Justice shows a Democrat senator leading a campaign to essentially control Superman, which is an accurate characterization of the current U.S. political landscape. Not that a Republican would be much better. Both sides of the party are all about controlling. Controlling you, controlling everything. Pundits debate back and forth about whether Superman should be allowed to go around saving and helping whoever he wants to. People throw things at him outside the Capitol building as they demand for him to leave. This is how our world would treat an alien with godlike powers, so it only makes sense that Superman would question himself whether he was doing more harm than good if so many people still hate him. And Superman commits the greatest sin in the eyes of the anti-Zaxxers. He says, "You can't control me." This Superman does what he wants based on what he believes, not what other people want or expect from him. This Superman isn't, "Aw, shucks," when given adulation by the crowds. As a noble person should, Cavill's Superman is awed and a bit disturbed when he helps people and they worship him. By the way, a Superman religion has appeared in some comic book stories. This is also a very real-world touch, as we've seen the deification of politicians on both sides of the aisle over the past 20-ish years. Even the battles are more realistic. This isn't playtime Saturday morning cartoons where no one ever gets hurt. This is serious science fiction. In the MCU, an army of thousands and thousands of aliens with blasters swarm New York with giant creatures crashing into buildings while the green behemoth rage monster tears recklessly through to battle all the aliens. And amazingly, there were no casualties. In Man of Steel, there were real consequences, with sections of Metropolis leveled and alien machines throwing people around like rag dolls, slamming them into the ground to their deaths. And that fact leads me to my next point. The second point is Cavill's Superman doesn't know how to fight. Because he was afraid he could not control his powers, he never had any fight training. He had just gotten his ability to fly after being on Earth for decades. Now he has to fight Zod, who is not only a trained military strategist and warrior, but genetically designed to be. Zod has all of Superman's abilities within days of arriving on Earth, so he's adapting much faster than Clark ever did. Terrence Stamp's Zod wanted to rule over humans. Michael Shannon's Zod doesn't want to rule over humans. He wants to eradicate them. So, a Superman who just finished completing his power set with no fight training is going up against a genetically created warrior who is quickly becoming a full power match and hellbent on genocide. That's why the final fight in Metropolis is so brutal, and Superman has no time to protect the innocent bystanders below. And as for the dumbest family in Metropolis, who were cornered in the train station and about to be burned alive by Zod? Well, first of all, way to blame the victims, even if they are fictional. And Zod was not going to stop with just them. He had billions and billions more to go. They hadn't found kryptonite yet, and there's no earth weapon that will subdue Zod. If Superman doesn't stop him right then and there, Zod would have become too powerful, and the human race would have been doomed. So Superman takes the life of a fellow Kryptonian, literally an endangered species with only a handful left in the universe. Now, is this Kryptonian stripped of his abilities like the one Reza Superman threw to an icy death? No, it's a fully powered Kryptonian. Does Cavill's Superman smile to his girlfriend and fly off to revenge assault another non-powered being like Reeves' Superman does? No. He reacts with the proper gravitas of his actions. Instantly overcome with guilt at having to take a life, even though he immediately saved innocent bystanders and in the long term stopped the genocide of billions of humans. I said it earlier, the Snyder movies aren't perfect. I think it was a mistake for Jonathan to die in the tornado. I can think of ways that Clark could have possibly saved him without the crowd seeing him do it. But in context, Jonathan and Clark had just had a fight where some very hurtful things were said. Clark is feeling especially guilty about disrespecting his adopted father. So when Dad puts up his hand to stop Clark, he complies. That's the ultimate sacrifice of a father willing to protect his son's secret at all costs. I may not agree with the creative choice, but I can respect it. And I'll admit the whole both mothers are named Martha ridicule is somewhat justified. The idea behind the scene, of course, was not to highlight the mothers have the same name, but to shock Batman into no longer seeing Superman as an alien, and instead understand that he's just another guy about to lose his parent to a villain. That being said, the "save Martha" line doesn't make sense coming from Superman, unless you accept that he knows the name of Batman's parents and he has the wherewithal to speak her name while being disoriented by the massive chunk of kryptonite in front of his face. It's bad execution. I've said before, the better way to do this would have been to have Lois intervene and explain Luthor had kidnapped Superman's human mother. They'll realize Luthor has manipulated both of them all along, and Batman would come to his senses and agree to fight the common enemy, and then give a smile when he learns Martha's name. That would have given much more credence to a major plot point in Snyder's planned Justice League sequels. Now, this would probably take another minute or two to have Lois pull Batman back from the proverbial brink, but it's much more organic. And it's too bad nobody asked me. On the other hand, Amy Adams was absolutely the best Lois Lane. Going across the continent to track down Clark and learning all about him even before he becomes Superman. That is an investigative reporter, even if she is impetuous and reckless. And it's a hell of a lot more professional than asking him what color underwear she's wearing and then letting the world and his enemies know that he can't see through lead. Cavill's Superman and Adam's Lois Lane were by far the most passionate and deep of all the cinematic incarnations. Their reunion at the farm in the Snyder Cut after his resurrection and his memories return is sweet and poignant. And I got to see Amy Adams in a bathtub. My wife got to see Henry Cavill climb into the bath with his clothes on. That's fucking hot. And my wife was also quite thrilled with the many shirtless Cavill scenes in the Snyder movies. So, Zack Snyder, if you're ever listening to this, my wife thanks you. By the way, for those of you bitching about the runtime, I'm betting that a theatrical release of Zack Snyder's Justice League would never have been 4 hours long, but probably close to three. He basically threw it all into the streaming release, and when you're never going to get another chance to tell the whole story, why the fuck not? And let's be honest, the big villain in the Snyderverse was never Luthor or Doomsday or even Darkseid. It was the Warner Brothers executives that continually interfered with the creators. Dawn of Justice made much more sense with the Ultimate Edition, which is what Snyder wanted for the theatrical release. And a side-by-side comparison proves Zack Snyder's Justice League was exponentially superior to the Whedon cut. The Reeves Superman is not as good as you remember it. And the Cavill Superman is nowhere near as bad as you try to claim it is. But in the end, none of it matters. Because they're both in the past. There's a new Superman on the way. And right now, we only know a little bit about the new Superman movie. We know who the writer and director is, James Gunn. James Gunn is good at writing and directing asshole comic book characters. Guardians of the Galaxy, The Suicide Squad, Peacemaker, Creature Commandos, all of them, to varying degrees, are jerks and assholes. And Gunn has proven to do a great job of writing those types of characters. It also helps that they're mostly obscure characters, that most comic book fans don't care if he retcons their origin story to become one of tragedy or horrible childhood trauma like he did with Polka Dot Man, or Weasel, or Peacemaker, or, well, you get the idea. By the way, yes, Zia, you're right, Polka Dot Man was not an asshole, but he was a tortured soul, a genetic experiment, and mentally unstable. He was also killed off in his moment of glory. Groot was not an asshole, but he got killed off too. And he got turned into the fucking annoying Baby Groot. I don't care what you say. I don't care how cute he is. He's fucking annoying. And then somehow turned into the even more fucking annoying Teenage Groot. I'm not confident that Gunn can handle a noble character like Superman. And I'm afraid that's why he has thrown in other heroes, like asshole Guy Gardner, or Hawkgirl, who has been predominantly portrayed as a hothead for the past 25 years. This is not a standalone Superman movie. It's another Batman vs. Superman throwing in unfamiliar characters, at least unfamiliar to casual moviegoers. And while that was considered a cardinal sin committed by Zack Snyder, according to the critics, it's now a brilliant move by James Gunn. What has Gunn really shown us about his Superman so far? Well, for all you anti-Zaxxers all upset about Cavill Superman not protecting citizens while he's locked in a life-or-death battle against a genocidal maniac with superior fighting abilities, I'd like for you to consider this. What is the very first thing we ever saw about the upcoming Superman film? It was a still photo of the new Superman sitting in a chair, casually putting on his red boots with what seems to be all the urgency of Mr. Rogers slipping on his loafers while he's singing, "Won't You Be My Neighbor?" And what's in the background of that photo? Why, that's some kind of alien-looking device in the sky, and it's blasting a death ray onto the city below. Wow, that really looks like a Superman heavily interested in protecting the citizens of Metropolis. Or maybe that's Gunn's meta-commentary, but I'm not getting my hopes up. And that new Superman suit is just awful. It looks only slightly better than a mid-level cosplayer at a regional Comic-Con. I'm not a fan of the red trunks on the outside, and I absolutely prefer modern designs that do away with it. But I understand why some people really want to have the underwear on the outside of the suit look. But if a superhero has to wear his underwear on the outside, they should be briefs, not boxers. The chest symbol looks like a diamond-shaped no sign. Maybe the Ghostbusters can use it for their 75th anniversary. It's based on the very obscure Superman Secundus from a side story to Grant Morrison's DC 1 million crossover event. Here's the big irony of that. Superman Secundus is a replacement Superman that came along when the true Superman was, quote, lost to history, end quote. Maybe that's Gunn's meta-commentary, but I'm not getting my hopes up. The Clark Kent in the trailer makes Reeves' Clark Kent look positively menacing. They really didn't need to dial up the dork for this one. Superman spends most of the trailer getting saved by his scruffy little dog, or getting things thrown at him by xenophobes. Another nod to Cavill Superman, and you know, there is a part of me hoping against hope that this is Gunn trying to prove that Snyder deserves more respect. But again, I'm not getting my hopes up. You think the way people are reacting to this trailer, that the film is already guaranteed to be the best DC movie of all time. For me, almost everything I've seen about this new Superman so far makes me feel, well, makes me feel like Superman's reaction to Steppenwolf's battle axe in the Snyder Cut. Not impressed. I love Nathan Fillion. Hell, I share a name with one of his television characters. I can't think of anything I've seen him in that I haven't liked. But I can't see him as Guy Gardner. I really hope this is a Michael Keaton as Batman or Heath Ledger as Joker kind of thing, where he just blows everyone away and he's great. But he's definitely better suited for Hal Jordan than he is for Guy Gardner. And as for the character of Guy Gardner, there's been a lot of talk about that amongst fans. The absolutely stupid bowl haircut, which was his look post-crisis, was a joke amongst DC fans for years. He looks like a joke in this movie. But what really floored me is there are some people who say he has a comics-accurate costume. He has a haircut that was seen in the comic books for a while, but a haircut alone does not make it comics accurate. That black and white costume he's wearing is nothing like the comics. In fact, that god-awful failed JLA pilot from the 90s that you have to find a bootleg copy of did a better job of a comics-accurate Guy Gardner costume than this movie. That's sad. While we're on the subject, why do the costumes of Gardner, Hawkgirl, and Mr. Terrific seem so similar? The Justice League, to my knowledge, has never, ever done matching costumes. However, the relatively new DC comic book team, the Terrifics, did have matching costumes. So why do that? We are way past the first X-Men trilogy days where movie makers were skittish on having the superheroes in diverse costumes. Why is the Justice League doing that in this movie? That's already disappointing. Nothing yet has piqued my interest in Superman, Crypto, Hawkgirl, or Mr. Terrific. The only character so far that I have any interest in is Metamorpho, because he's a really cool character, finally making a live action appearance. And he's played by the wonderful Anthony Carrigan. But one thing in this trailer motivates me to see the movie. Everything else is underwhelming at best. But here's the thing. Even though I spent most of the first half of this podcast dismantling the nostalgia-skewed view of the Reeve movies, I like them. I like the Christopher Reeves movies. I even liked Richard Pryor in Superman 3. Hell, in 1987, I walked 6 miles to the nearest movie theater so I could see the very first showing of Superman IV, The Quest for Peace. I like the Christopher Reeves movies. I don't give a shit that he turned back time to save Lois, and I don't give a shit that he murdered Zod. The movies were a blast. When I was a kid, I still like them as an adult, even though now I see them for what they are. Flawed, overly campy, and should be appreciated for what they were for the era that they were in, and not necessarily emulated in new projects. And even though I spent much of the last few minutes expressing my early disappointment of the burgeoning DCU based on what little we've been given, I hope Gunn's Superman is good. And I want it to succeed. And I want it to become a series of clever and unique and bold comic book movies that surpass the charming but shallow MCU. I'm going to see Superman in the theaters because I love DC comic book characters. But I'm definitely going to keep my expectations low. And unfortunately, recently, low expectations have served me well. See, I did that when Justice League hit theaters, because I knew Whedon made changes, and he was probably going to Marvelize it and make it bland and easily palatable for the general public. So all I wanted when I went to see the Justice League was to see the heroes of my favorite comic book team of all time come together, fight the bad guy, and win the day. And that's exactly what I got. And once I saw what the movie was intended to be with the Snyder Cut, the Whedon Cut looked generic, watered down, and homogenized. Likewise, all I really expect from Gunn's Superman movie is a simplistic, modern retread of the Christopher Reeve films, with just enough depth to give the appearance that there's more to the characters than there really is. I expect it to be overly peppered with kitschy, campy humor and callbacks to satiate the nostalgia stoners. And I'd be willing to bet the final scene will have Superman flying with a smile over the earth and into the sunrise to the John Williams score. The cinematic equivalent of a pleasant little dish of plain vanilla ice cream. Here's to low expectations. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.